Welcome. This is Stan Lee of Marvel Comics warning you to look around you, your classmates, your friends. You never know which one of them may be a mutant.
The third time is the charm, as Xavier's podcast for gifted youngsters takes a look at the second issue of the X-Men, in which the Merry Mutants take on the Vanisher. Guess what he does? And what experimental aircraft made the pages of the X-Men? What is the secret that got a president killed? All of this and more in this installment of Xavier's podcast for gifted youngsters.
And welcome to Xavier's podcast for gifted youngsters. This is episode 3. I am J. David Weider.
And I am Michael Bailey.
And what we do here at Xavier's podcast is go through the X-Men saga issue by issue, beginning from the beginning. Wow, that's redundant. But what we're doing this week is we're going to jump into X-Men issue number 2. Before that, I do want to make one point, and that's that we have moved, and we are now at xavierspodcast.com. If you go to the old address, there will be a hyperlink. So jump right into it. So speaking of jumping right into it, Michael has the synopsis this time around. Are you ready to go, Mr. Bailey?
Oh, yes, indeed I am. And boy, this is a this is an interesting one.
That's a good word for it.
The X-Men number 2, which has a mostly red cover, which to me, red skies always mean a crisis in the DC universe. So I don't quite know what's going on in Washington, D.C. You have Cyclops, the Beast, Iceman, Angel, and Marvel Girl, the founding members of the X-Men, with Professor Xavier surrounding a guy who looks like he's dressed like a King Cobra with a purple cape. They are on the lawn of the White House. And this is apparently in the sensational Fantastic Four style. This thing was a whopping 12 cents when it first came out. The Vanisher says, "I've beaten the X-Men before, and I shall do it again. But this time, it will be forever." And Marvel Girl says, "Stay back, all of you. Those are the orders of Professor X. The X-Men must find out. How do you beat a mutant who is unbeatable? A book-length Marvel classic. Nothing can stop the Vanisher." This was released on September 3rd, 1963, written by Stan Lee, drawn by Jack Kirby, inked by Paul Reinman, and lettered by Sam Rosen. The X-Men are rushing back to the mansion to answer the summons issued by Professor Xavier. Apparently our heroes were hanging out in the city, in their costumes, when they got the call, and they each make their way back to Professor X in their own unique way. The Beast climbs up the side of a building and hops onto the top of a train. Marvel Girl saves Angel from a throng of female fans, but ends up tuckering herself out in the process when she uses her teleportation, again quotes, powers to drop the girls that were all gaga over Warren Worthington III on top of a movie theater. Cyclops and Iceman spot a collapsing wall that is threatening a construction crew. Cyclops blasts the wall with his optic blast, which is also redundant, saving the crew, and after getting a bunch of congratulations, they hitch a ride back to the mansion in an ice cream truck. The team assembles before Professor X, and after Xavier snaps at his charges, he displays the newest threat they must face, the Vanisher. The team watches a film of the Vanisher walking up to a bank in his costume, telling some cops along the way that he intends to rob the place, and once he has the money, the bank guards attempt to apprehend him, but he, well, vanishes. Kind of right there in the name. Apparently this makes Iceman kind of hyper, and he starts shooting snowballs out of his hands. Xavier instructs Jean to show the team how she would defend against such an attack. She does, and Xavier breaks up the fun by sending the team into the danger room to prepare for their battle with the Vanisher, who may or may not be a mutant. Angel is up first and does well against a missile attack, but he misses the final one. The Beast is next, but gets suckered early by a trap door. He struggles with all his might to get out of the jam, and finally manages to do so. Turns out this was the real test, and with the help of Marvel Girl, he lands safe and sound. Meanwhile, in the Pentagon, the Vanisher appears and announces his intention to steal government defense plans because he's a mutant and mutants are freaking awesome. Later, every criminal not in jail is trying to get in with the Vanisher, and he picks out a few of the silly Homo sapiens to serve as his lackeys. Meanwhile, back at the Danger Room, Marvel Girl uses her telekinesis to lift a giant ball into the air. When her grip starts to slip, Cyclops uses his optic blast to save her. Iceman starts acting like a 5-year-old as Professor Xavier, already bored with this scene, contacts Agent Duncan of the FBI via telepathy. Apparently, Duncan is part of the Department of Special Affairs, and he arranges transport for the X-Men via a McDonnell XV-1 convertiplane, and I looked it up, and this thing was real.
I didn't get a chance to look it up. I had no idea it was real.
No, I Googled it, and this was indeed a real vehicle. And I was like, props for them for not making it like a McConnell XV-1 or something like that. And they take that to Washington to take on the Vanisher. Meanwhile, the Vanisher manages to steal the plans and vanish away, only to be confronted by the X-Men. The X-Men and the Vanisher then start playing a complex game of keep away, as the Vanisher appears and disappears, grabs the plans, then loses the plans, then gets them back again. In the end, he gasses Marvel Girl, and then laughs when Iceman freezes his plans to his hands, saying he will just appear in a warmer climate and wait for the ice to melt. The X-Men are a little down at their defeat, and it doesn't help when the papers announce that they were, in fact, defeated by the Vanisher. The Vanisher, meanwhile, demands $10 million, tax-free, to return the stolen plans. The X-Men are still down in the dumps about their defeat and argue amongst themselves until Professor X once again has had enough of their crap and brings them to attention. He informs the group that he will be going with them the next time they head to Washington to tackle the Vanisher, and shows them another movie displaying how powerful the villain is. Professor X informs the White House of his plan, and the next day, the X-Men and Professor Xavier face off against the Vanisher and his thugs. Professor X tells the Vanisher to stop this nonsense, and when he refuses and laughs at the prof for being a mere human, Xavier informs him that he is in fact a mutant and uses his mental powers to make the Vanisher forget who he is. Because that would make a rather dull ending, the X-Men fight the crooks working for the Vanisher, and then the army comes in and takes them into custody. In the end, the X-Men tell their teacher how awesome he is, and Xavier reminds them that the most powerful weapon of all is the human mind.
Wow.
It wasn't that bad, but there's some really goofy things about this issue that I don't quite understand. So, but I figured you'd go through your notes first.
Well, starting with the cover, I like the use of red versus the white we saw last issue and we'll see next issue.
Mm-hmm.
It stands out, but man, the Vanisher is a mort. It just really is.
He's an ugly character. It's not the best costume Jack Kirby ever designed. I was confused by the cover when I first looked at it. Since I've beaten the X-Men before, I'm like, this is the first time you've appeared. But then I realized halfway through, oh, he's talking about the first time he beat them in the issue, and they're standing in front of the White House. Everything makes sense now.
So. Yeah, it all comes together. But the cover I like, Vanisher I could do without. But as far as the book itself, once you open that page and you get to page one, that is an awesome opening shot.
Yeah, it's a great... And once again, Kirby opens up with a dynamic shot of the team, like, rushing it towards something. And it creates that sense of excitement right away that I love.
Yeah, and the blue is starting to come out on the costume, which I know you and I both prefer the black, but mm-hmm. I like the tone of blue they chose in this issue. And it'll vary over time, but...
Yeah, I don't hate the black. I mean, the blue. I just prefer black, but the blue looks just as fine.
I agree. And you had a note here on page two. I've got several.
I'm just wondering why the X-Men are in the city in full costume.
that never says what they were doing.
Yes, exactly.
I'm just confused.
I'm just confused. I mean, it seems like a really bizarre way to show off their powers. But again, this was Marvel in the 60s, and you had to allow for such things. So it's not like I'm not saying it detracts from the story. I was just a bit confuzzled.
And see, I almost wrote that note down, but I'm like, I'm not going to be nitpicky, and I'm glad you did, because I was scratching my head for some time. But there's other things. For one thing, let's look at the Beast. He actually applies some really sharp logic in this issue, as if he got smarter somehow.
Yeah, he's not all the way there yet, but it's getting more. He's getting smarter.
Well, it feels like the characters are still kind of in flux. Stan's still trying to find the voice of each of them. I think not that it came out half baked in the first issue, but I think there's more thought following that first issue where he could flesh them out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Beast is the smart one. And as far as the Angel getting, you know, mobbed by groupies, when did the X-Men become the monkeys? They're supposed to be hated and feared. He's not Davy Jones.
They're not hated and feared yet, though. That's the weird thing, is that they are looked upon during this entire issue as just another group of superheroes. So I don't think Stan had quite figured out that critical component to what would make the X-Men different from other Marvel heroes. I guess, but it would kind of make sense that given that the Fantastic Four have appeared and Thor's out there, Spider-Man's just making his first appearances. I mean, the Hulk is feared, but he's mostly out in the New Mexico desert. So it's not like people in New York City are really going to be bothered by him. I guess because, you know, they're younger heroes, they're flashy, they're in costume, that maybe at first, before the mutant hysteria had really set in, that they would be popular.
Okay, that kind of makes sense. And that kind of ties into some of the notes we'll find later this issue. I think the idea was still, and I think your logic is solid, but I think at the same time, in the real world side, I don't think, I think it was exactly what you mentioned. Stan hadn't quite gotten pinpointed yet. Speaking of pinpointing, Jean lifting those girls up and putting them on top of a movie theater, do you get the idea that maybe she acted out of jealousy a little bit? Because those relationships haven't been formed yet completely.
Yeah, I mean, they really start doing it next issue.
Yeah.
With Jean, but I think, and this is actually why I like this group dynamic so much, is that if you dropped a girl into this setting, she might be attracted to more than one of them at first at the age of 16. And then finally settle on one. So she may have a thing for Warren. And frankly, Warren's, you know, blonde-haired, blue-eyed, rich as hell.
I was going to say the same thing. He's a sharp-looking dude.
And, you know, he's pretty cut together. I mean, she probably wouldn't be attracted to Bobby because Bobby's just too young. He's very immature. It's what separates Bobby from the rest of the group, so I'm not complaining. And it's kind of why I like Bobby a little bit, is that he is the kid of the group and plays that role very well. And the Beast, I'm sorry, Beast is kind of funky looking, but she may have had a thing for him if she liked broad-shouldered guys. So there's probably a little bit of jealousy going on in this.
He's got a great personality.
Oh, man. I did look on IMDb on page 3. The movie is called A Teenager's Tears. And I guess because he had been writing Spider-Man with a hyphen, teenager was supposed to have a hyphen.
Well, there were a lot of words. And Stan was somebody who read a lot of Shakespeare, wanted to write the great American novel. He probably read a lot of the British novels that came over where they did hyphenate a lot of stuff.
Okay.
And that may be why we see Spider-Man with a hyphen, or, you know, Teenager's Tears.
Well, we see Spider-Man with a hyphen because it can be mistaken very simply for Superman when written out on small text on comic books.
Well, that's true, and has been.
Yeah, so I think, and our good friend John Wilson and Joshua Bertoni and Donovan Grant can confirm that. I think I remember hearing that on ASM Classics. So, but I did, I just for a lark, just to see if there was something called A Teenager's Tears on IMDb, I Googled it and found a novel about a kid that killed him or herself because their parents were polygamists.
I kind of want to read that.
I was like, oh, okay, I'll just... Because, you know, you're sitting here, you're reading the book, and I read the book on the computer because I have these digitally, because I want to see the original issue. And I have that DVD of the book. And, you know, it's like, well, I'm on the computer anyway. So...
That's what I've been doing. And there's something, well, we'll get to that later on, but I Googled something that I was just like, wow. It has a completely different context in modern day than it did in 1963. But I have also, on page three, we see Jean getting winded from using her telekinesis, not teleportation, even despite the, I don't even know if it's a typo or if they just hadn't really coined the phrase yet. But this is, we're slowly learning about Jean, and you mentioned John Wilson. We had a discussion the other night where you don't see Jean's origin for quite some time.
So you don't even see it in the comics.
Pardon me?
You don't even see it in the comics.
No, it's in a... I have that here.
Bizarre Adventures number 18, I think.
Thank you.
Somewhere around there.
I don't have that encyclopedic knowledge. Whatever the word is, I don't have that kind of knowledge.
This is my gift. This is my curse.
But it's weird to think she can't lift more than her own body weight, considering what we're going to see in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, and that may be taking, you know, the idea that we're reading these retroactively. I try to take that out of context and as if I'm reading it for the first time, but I know too much about these characters to remove that completely. So it remains interesting to watch her develop, and that's just kind of the beginning of it. And there in panel two, we're speaking of where Warren is picking her up. Did Kirby's art get sleeker in this issue?
I don't know if it may be the inker. I am by no means an expert on comic book art. But Warren does look a little thinner. Jean looks a little thinner. So I don't know if maybe they toned it down. Maybe the inker did a little more and it was more of Kirby doing breakdowns or whatever. But the actual, like, at the bottom of that page, the three panels of Cyclops opening his visor and the blast and all that, that's pure Kirby layouts.
Yeah.
That's his storytelling. So I really don't know. I liked them saving the construction workers because it was... It's kind of useless, but at the same time, you're reminded of what their powers are. This is only the second issue. This may be somebody's first issue of the X-Men. Stanley is still trying to convince us that everyone wears purple pants on page four. and I do like the fact that the dude's glove literally turns into ice cubes. I don't quite know how that works, but, you know, whatever.
I'll let it go because it's amusing. But speaking of Cyclops opening his visor, does his attitude changes off and on throughout, and especially throughout this issue and next issue? Because here he's pretty confident. Speak for yourself, Sonny. Just wait till I lift my power visor. Where he's not going to be that enthusiastic in the future.
No, especially starting next issue. And I hate to keep saying that, but next issue is where the personalities of these characters starts to become firmly cemented into who they're going to be within terms of the team, within the group dynamic. There's one bit that is thankfully not really talked about much because it's creepy as hell. But we'll get to that next week.
We won't hit on that yet, but we will be hitting on it. That's a poor choice of words now that I think about it.
I was about to say...
Well, yeah, I like the construction scene, too. It's a nice, you know, side adventure. And I also like the fact that as Iceman's jumping out of the back of the ice cream truck, the guy charges him for those three chocolate chip pops that he ate.
Mary Moppet ice cream pops. It's a little silly that they rode in an ice cream truck.
It's comic relief.
And did Professor X wipe this guy's mind as he was driving away?
No, not yet.
So
well, now that we'll get to that. That's speaking of Professor X mind wiping people, did his head get bigger on page 4?
Yeah, I was about to say Gurn cranium here. It's
and he good looks Lord. Baked. He looks absolutely baked.
He looks kind of baked. He also looks like if one eye was slightly higher than the other, he'd be like Jason when he fell in the water at Camp Crystal Lake. So
slap a hockey mask on that man. You and I actually have a similar note about the Vanisher and his actions here.
Yeah, the first time we see the Vanisher, though, he's got this like look on his face.
Hi.
Kirby villains were never pretty, but he walks up to a bunch of cops. He goes, "Hey, we get all kinds in our beats. Hey, okay, buddy, why the get up? There is no law against wearing a costume, and you know it." Well, they never really said that one. Now direct me to the Metro National Bank. I intend to rob it.
And now, they let him.
I'm no legal expert by any stretch. In fact, most of the foundation of my legal knowledge comes from watching Law & Order, which is suspect because they get a lot of stuff wrong. That seems to me, this is before Miranda. They could have just locked his ass up.
Or just beat him senseless. There were no cell phone cameras at this point.
Sure, I know. There's no law against having intentions.
Oh, yes, there is.
It's
conspiracy
like,
to commit murder.
Yeah. Oh, man. That's like one of those things where why didn't Spider-Man just have the check made out to cash? Or as was pointed out in a recent issue, second to most recent issue of ASM, why didn't he start a limited liability company in his own name that he could funnel through several like dummy corporations and get the money that way?
Well, the thing is, they let him rob it. Yeah, take the money. They take it that far. Yeah, take it. Cut paper dolls. Well, there, as you mentioned, there are costume people out there. Magneto's been out there. We've seen villains in the Spider-Man world. Dr. Doom is out there. I think at this point there would be a little bit of paranoia, especially when a guy walks up in a Serpentor or Mole Man Vulture mashup costume.
Serpentor and Mole Man had a kid. I'll let that image sink in for a second.
There you go.
While people continuously vomit afterwards.
I also like that that Professor X's head also projects movies. That may be why it's bigger.
Well, they're watching a video. Who is his cameraman? Seriously, who's following this dude around for Professor X? It's like, who are you? I'm just here for Professor X. Who's that? You really don't want to know. I just have my Super 8. But they would also have to have like a boom operator too, because I don't think they had the ability to film with sound. I think he had to have sound. So somebody filmed this. Somebody recorded the audio. They went back and edited it. I remember Bruce Timm and Paul Dini and them talking about this, and it was the first time I ever thought about it. They were talking about an episode of Batman the Animated Series with Mr. Freeze, and where they showed his origin. And they showed, like, the video footage, and it was, like, from different angles and stuff. They're like, who cut this together? I never really thought about it before, but that is such a staple in comic book and fiction in general, that when they show, like, the video of it, it's shot like a movie. It's not like a stationary camera from one particular angle. And the more I see it, the more it bugs the living piss out of me.
Somebody has Windows Movie Maker. Look what they cut together. Somehow, somebody follows these villains around and chronicles their origins. It's a 60 Minutes piece every time. I'm morally safer.
So we go into the training sequence, which is kind of cool because they're prepping for the fight. I'm just wondering what was going through Professor Xavier's mind when he set this thing up for Angel. Hey, Angel, pretend this invisibilism, this missile, excuse me, is a man that disappears. Now catch it. Now take off your shirt. I mean,
it's like camp counselor type thing.
And I mean, seriously, what is a pretend this missile is the Vanisher, match its speed and catch it before it eludes you. Is he trying to get him faster than the Vanisher so he can grab the Vanisher before the Vanisher vanishes?
I honestly don't know, because it doesn't play out that way, that's for sure. It doesn't play that way at all.
But the strain is too much, so Xavier takes out his tricorder and has the Angel lift up his shirt, and it is kind of show me on the doll where Professor Xavier touched you.
What was the movie with Brad Pitt, Kevin Bacon, Clockers?
Was it Clockers? Or was it Sleepers?
Sleepers.
Yes, that's
that movie must have been based on the X-Men.
I think there's a little difference.
That's Jason Patrick right there.
That's stretching it, but I'll go with the joke.
Well, think about this, though. While that's going on, Beast is doing his thing. You have giant robotic fists. There are missiles firing. There are big trap doors. So some contractor somewhere is both really rich and either knows everything about the X-Men or knows absolutely nothing.
Here's the question. Is this the first time they call it the Danger Room?
Yes, because we actually had that discussion.
Yeah, because I couldn't remember it from the last one, but here it was like officially named.
Yes, because they just called it the study, and then they were training, and the X-Men train a lot.
Well, again, that's one of the aspects of these early issues and the team itself that I like is that you hardly ever see the Justice League working out together. I don't know if you really see the Avengers training together, though everybody apparently at some point learned Kung Fu and fighting techniques from Captain America. Because if you're an Avenger for more than 5 minutes, apparently Cap takes you aside and shows you how to disable an opponent rather handily. So,
show me on the doll where Cap touched you.
And that's when he breaks the therapist's arm. Oh, it was that kind of touching. But it's a dynamic scene, though. Again, I'm trying to look at this from the perspective of somebody who had been reading like superhero comics maybe for just a little bit, and then along comes this book where you have these characters who are training, and there's this room in the house that, you know, yeah, it's kind of funny, you know, the fisting thing, because, well, it has the word fisting in it. But it's also quite innovative and cool. And though I can see, though, compared to other, especially with the second and the third issue, which we'll be discussing next week, I can see why the X-Men didn't quite catch on as fast as Spider-Man did. Or the Fantastic Four.
Well, the Fantastic Four hang around the Baxter building all the time.
Mm-hmm. I think it's just more of...
I guess at the bottom line, it is still a school.
I think it's just a little too weird for people at this point. I think it was ahead of its time. Like, it was the next stage in the evolution of what Stan was doing, but that doesn't mean that I don't like it. And I could be completely proven wrong in the next couple of issues. So that's just the kind of feeling I got, especially reading this one. It's just like, wow, we're spending a lot of time hanging out in this house, but it's still kind of cool because Jack Kirby's drawing it. So
yeah. Well, speaking of bad feelings, there's a line on page 10 in the second panel when Jean says, we have all put our destinies in the hands of Professor X. Think about that in the real-world perspective, especially from the real-world perspective from the 60s. These are kids put in the care of this one man who is literally throwing them into dangerous territory often and training them to do so. I mean, even his traps have freaking missiles. And this is just the training. I don't know. I wouldn't want my destiny in. I can't think of a teacher that I've ever had. And I've had some great teachers, but to put my entire life on the line at the bequest of a teacher, I don't know that I would be able to take it that far.
But at the same time, this is the teacher that took them in, that probably, especially when the mutants start to become hated and feared, he treats them, you know, as his equals. He's giving them a home, an identity, and all that. So, and you know, they've decided to be superheroes, so superheroes have to train, and danger's part of the job, blah, 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 blah. So I can kind of see both sides of that argument. Page 11... Oh, sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
I was about to say, page 11, we get a very typical villain scene in 60s Marvel comics where the Vanisher's just sitting there on a chair while all of these thugs and hooligans and hoodlums are, like, surrounding him. You know, one's wanting to light his cigarette, another one's bringing him fruit, and they're all like, we want you to be our boss. It's like, oh, God, I love the 60s.
Well, it's straight-up scenery chewing. Because yes. He's making all these demands and saying, I'm going to pull off the caper of the century here. I can't see. I can't do the voice.
It's only fitting that Homo Superior should be served by the inferior Homo Sapiens. She, therefore, I shall...
Speaking of that, there wasn't Twitter at this time. So words like mutant and Homo Superior, they weren't trending. They weren't out there. Why does everybody have this in their vocabulary? Because mutation is a relatively new phenomenon.
I just want one of the cut scene of one of the guys going, did he just call me a homo? So, but yes, not politically like correct, but funny.
But it seems like everybody knows the correct terms. I don't. It gets around. I don't know. There's no internet. There's no underground yet.
It gets around.
Well, it just, you don't automatically have like a Wikipedia entry beamed into your head unless, well, okay, never mind, maybe in this universe, now that I think about it.
I was about to say it's you know, it's a different kind of place, so
maybe I'm overthinking that one. McConnell.
Yeah, the the McDonnell XV1. Do they say McConnell, or I thought they said McConnell?
I misread it.
The McDonnell XV1 convertiplane was developed by the Air Force starting around 1951. It took its first flight in 1954, and it was an experimental compound helicopter designated as a convertiplane. Developed for a joint research program between the United States Air Force and the United States Army to explore technologies to develop an aircraft that could take off and land like a helicopter, but fly at faster air speeds, similar to a conventional airplane. The XV-1 could reach a top speed of 200 miles per hour, faster than any previous rotorcraft, but the program was terminated due to the complexity of the technology, which gave only a modest gain in performance. So, that's just really cool that they pulled something like that in. And it does pretty much look like what Jack Kirby drew, too, from what I'm seeing. It's a bizarre-looking aircraft, so...
It is odd. And it's, when did the Professor X get government connections, and how did he get them to trust them enough to put that thing on their head? That's some straight-up X-Files action right there.
Like we were talking about before, apparently maybe the original concept was that it was going to be more of a straight-up superhero group that had connections with the government. You know, it seemed like in the first issue there was something kind of some kind of shady thing going on in Professor Xavier's past. Like, he's got connections to all sorts of things, but he's obviously rich.
Oh,
like,
he's
a lot.
Incredibly rich. I think it's off the charts rich. But if he has all these connections, since they were taking on a government facility in issue number one, why didn't he call in Agent Duncan here, who happens to look like Jack Kirby, by the way, and tell him my X-Men are on the way so he can get them some clearance?
He does look a little like Jack Kirby, yeah, doesn't he?
It makes me think of Superman the Animated Series. It makes me think of
Terrible Turpin.
Yeah.
Who was a member of the Boy Commandos, by the way. my obscure DC fact for the episode. Pages 14 to 17, I really liked this action sequence.
It did have a lot going on.
Because when I mentioned that it was a game of keep away, that's essentially what it was. I mean, we have that goofy first page of all the agents surrounding the desk with machine guns, and he shows up in the middle of it, and then they try to pigpile onto him. Then another group of agents tries to pigpile onto it, and then they just start playing with the... It's just kind of cool, actually. I really liked it.
And it's the first time the X-Men face defeat.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that was a very big piece of what made the Marvel Age successful, is that the heroes would not always win.
And in true Stan Lee style, X-Tray, X-Tray, Vanisher makes monkeys out of X-Men. I knew it. The X-Men are nothing but overrated phonies. If they were really so great, they wouldn't keep their identities a secret.
And so it begins.
I love random dialogue in the Marvel Universe.
I love the fact that Jean is wistfully staring at the reader at the bottom panel, as everybody argues.
While the Beast is looking at his hands like, all I need is some pants, a decent pair of pants. But here's my question. Who demands $10 million tax-free?
Dr. Evil.
Who's going to file a tax return for the money that they blackmailed from the government? They gave me $10 million, and unfortunately that puts me at a really expensive taxed bracket, so I've got to set aside 60% of that because I have to give it right back. You know, why did I ask for these forms? I don't. It's almost like Dr. Doofenshmirtz from Phineas and Ferb. Why did I get these forms?
See,
I don't understand it.
I'm not familiar
funny
with
show.
That one. Okay. I believe you.
Not my references fall on deaf ears. But yeah, I never noticed that Marvel Girl's kind of staring at me, and it's kind of creeping me out, so I'm going to move the...
Actually...
I'm going to move the page.
As I was going through, I forgot to mention it. Page 12, I happened to notice it, and you mentioned that Cyclops saves Marvel Girl, and she's like, Cyclops, what would I have done without you? That is the first spark of romance between Scott and Jean.
A little bit. First time she ever gave him the time of day, at least.
Yeah,
kind of sad that it took her almost dying to do so. But
it's awesome that with a love this pure, that it's really just hard to believe that Cyclops may one day make out with a blonde tramp on Jean's grave. Allegedly.
Allegedly. But only a British guy would think of that. So... Scottish.
I think he's Scottish.
Whatever. Whatever.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. He's actually from Fargo. Grant Morrison's accent is just a giant put on to confuse people and get him work.
So he's that pretentious college kid.
Exactly.
The sequence where Iceman freezes up Warren's wings, A, I like the fact that Warren uses it essentially as a fan. B, we're not going to see this again ever. Next issue. And the professor going with the X-Men, it just made me think of, remember maybe when your parents decided to go to the mall with you when you were a teenager and you just wanted to hang out with your friends? He's kind of a buzzkill.
Yeah, that never quite happened to me, but I can understand why it would be a problem.
Well,
yes.
The weird thing is, if he's going and he... Because the Professor X situation is, people know who Professor Xavier is. They don't know he's a mutant. And they don't know that he's associated with the X-Men. So isn't this going to be the beginning of blowing his cover, or can he just throw on a pair of glasses and call it good?
Well, at the end of the day, he could make them think whatever he
wanted
them to think.
Well, that's right. Okay.
I don't think he's quite worried about it, given the end of this issue, where he just makes the Vanisher forget who he is.
And
he looks kind of constipated when he's doing it, though. On page 20.
Constipation is awesome. But what about the face-off in front of the White House?
I love it. It's a great. It's goofy looking because you have a bunch of thugs in suits with the Serpentor Mole Man personification of the love that dare not speak its name. And then you have the X-Men on the other side, Iceman looking particularly wonky because he's simply like a lump of ice at this point. But at the same time, it's kind of cool, but only in the 60s could you get this close to the White House.
Yeah. Well, I guess the X-Men were invited in the Vanisher. Can he teleport other people?
Or does I have no idea. Maybe they all just... It's like, meet me at this address. Well, what address is it? 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Where's that? You're an idiot.
This is before Google Maps. You never know.
I think this was... Well, maybe these guys dropped out of school before they found... Before they took their civics class. But, what?
Oh, go ahead.
No, it's just his eyes, his voice. What is it that fills my soul with dread? I must escape his presence. I must vanish before it's too late. That's kind of creepy.
Did you notice back on page 19 that Agent Duncan's calling the chief executive? That's mm-hmm. the freaking president.
Yes, the president knows who Xavier is. And that knowledge gets him killed.
Oh.
I'm sorry. That was very tasteless. But it's better than the magic bullet theory.
It could have been Magneto. That's what Matthew Vaughn is trying to say for the X-Men First Class sequel. He wants to do that scene. And do you know what the Office of Special Affairs is in real life?
No.
It's actually it's real, but it's a department of the Church of Scientology. It's responsible for directing legal affairs and public relations, pursuing investigations, and just publicizing the church's social betterment works. Apparently the definition has changed quite a bit since 1963.
Yeah.
Is this a... I mean, S.H.I.E.L.D. hasn't been... S.H.I.E.L.D. has not entered into the picture yet.
No, because the Bond craze really hasn't hit big yet. So they really haven't had a need for S.H.I.E.L.D. to take advantage of the spy craze. So,
nice.
It's true. I mean, I love Marvel to death, but they tend to chase trends. And unfortunately, as the years go on, they tend to chase trends that are about 5 years out of style. Yes, I'm looking at Dazzler.
Oh. So. We like disco in the mid-80s. No, we don't. But I like as you were talking about how the Vanisher looks constipated as he's getting wiped. Poor choice of words, but the professor acts all coy. He essentially just lobotomized a guy.
Yes.
He's just grinning to himself.
Like, no trouble, I got it.
Don't you worry about it. The X-Men's destinies are in his hands.
This is why Professor Xavier is a lot scarier than everyone really gives him credit for. Though I don't know if Stan got to this point in the plot and said, "Well, I've taken care of the Vanisher, but we still have a couple pages of stuff." Or maybe that was his original ending, and Jack Kirby's like, "Screw this! I'm drawing a big fight," and added like a couple more pages.
But it's cool. I love that because I like that. The X-Men are really in sync. Cyclops digs a hole, Iceman covers it over. And the Beast watches.
And that's creepy sounding. No, the great thing about it is that they got defeated by the Vanisher, so these poor thugs get the crap kicked out of them. Probably a little harder than they were intending to, just to feel better about themselves. But at the end, they're all like, imagine if they knew you were the leader of the X-Men, sir, and it was you who defeated the Vanisher in the only way possible, mentally.
Yeah,
I
don't think they teach ethics at Xavier's.
Always remember, my X-Men, the greatest power on Earth is the magnificent power we all of us possess, the power of the human brain. Next issue, the X-Men face the greatest danger of all. You get the feeling that they don't know what the X-Men are going
to face at all. I don't think they know. But that last shot really in the context, it's actually quite disturbing because they're surrounding him, and I'm thinking to myself, if Bobby flunks a test, does he take away memories of his puppy?
Or does he put memories in there of him, his puppy getting run over right in front of him?
And what if somebody wants to quit the X-Men? Do they get their mind wiped?
Well, who would ever want to quit the X-Men?
Well, I think each one of them have quit at one point, but...
Yes, I was joking.
Let's go join the Defenders.
That was actually a pretty cool team.
I know, but...
I really liked it. No, the... But all in all, a good issue. I mean, really and truly... It could have been a lot worse, but this is pretty much Marvel still very much in its infancy, excuse me, because I can speak. Couldn't tell that from my synopsis, but I can. You know, not all Marvel villains were winners, which is kind of sad when you consider that Marvel has kind of a better rogues gallery, all things considered. I mean, who's the heavy hitters, bad guy-wise, in the DC Universe? Batman and the Flash. That's it.
Yeah, pretty much. And even our beloved Superman, I'm sorry, his rogues gallery is lacking.
It's the thing. It's the cross we bear as Superman fans. We have to, you know, we can't get into arguments about like who's better, who's got the better rogues gallery. I mean, if people actually did something with Superman's rogues gallery, I think people would like those bad guys more. But unfortunately, on a historical basis, they were treated kind of shabbily. So, not that the Vanisher is a winner by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, I think he's one of my least favorite X-Men villains. He's very forgettable.
Yes, indeed he is. This thing is full of ads.
Yes, it is.
All male
He-Man.
Yeah, on the inside cover, you got the guy flexing, and suddenly I need an adult. Like,
Stranger
really?
Danger.
Stranger Danger. We do get a ad for Strange Tales, number 115, which has the Human Torch fighting Spider-Man's deadly foe, the Uncanny Sandman. The Torch will have to... And we got Spider-Man on that cover saying the Torch will have to save himself without the help of Spider-Man. But I wonder, can he do it? You're a jerk, Peter.
Wow, I technically Johnny's been at this longer than Peter.
Yeah.
Speaking of needing an adult, there's an ad on the next page, Fun for Boys. And
a guy with
acrobatic.
A rope.
Yeah.
The key to hypnotism, the key to judo, home experiments and electricity.
Oh, these are all really...
That's going to end in a lawsuit.
No. I missed the electricity one. Oh,
that's just creepy. Another Marvel masterpiece, Journey into Mystery, number 98, Thor meets the Human Cobra. And if you thought the Vanisher looked like ass,
this one looks like dirty ass.
Yeah. Though there is also a Tales of Asgard, Odin battles the Ice Giants. So given the fact that I got to see the Thor movie about 2 weeks ago, and he had a bunch of frost giants in there. That's kind of a neat bit of synchronicity there.
What a coinkydink!
What a great movie!
That was phenomenal. Speaking of Marvel movies, that one may almost be as good, if not a little bit better, than Iron Man, the first one.
I'll agree with that because Iron Man is my favorite Marvel film. Will you work Saturday mornings for $5 to $20 extra? This spare time shoe business can make big money for you. I could just see kids trying to shine people's shoes, repair them, doing horrible, then blaming Marvel Comics. New accordions, save up to one half. Trade-ins welcomed. Small down payment, buy on easy terms, 5-day free trial.
Be the hit. You're going to get a lot of dates with the accordion.
And a young Al Yankovic is forever changed.
He's the only one that can get away with it, let's be honest.
That is true. Well, no, because there's a group called Great Big Sea that's out of Newfoundland that has an accordion in the thing, but it's but they call it a squeeze box, so it sounds cooler.
I'd be lying if I said it didn't sound cooler.
We got another ad for live seahorses, adorable pet hamsters, and darling pet monkeys.
Is that hamster attacking that guy?
It looks like he's biting the guy's hand. Great, they're selling rabid hamsters. That's exactly what they need. Another Marvel masterpiece, Avengers number 2, where they fight the Space Phantom. It's actually a really cool-looking cover, too, because you have the Phantom disguised as the Hulk. And you can kind of see the Hulk's outline on him. That's actually kind of daring for the 60s.
Yeah, it's pretty advanced. That's still Kirby, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Another hodgepodge page of ads. I hate these freaking things after a while. You see one, you've basically seen them all, in my opinion. So.
1,000 magic tricks for 25 cents, right next to live monkeys. That sounds like a party right there.
I have to agree with the guys over at ASM. What the hell was about the 60s that you could get live animals through the mail? Give me just one easy evening, and I'll teach you how to hypnotize girls into having sex with you easily.
It doesn't say one easy evening, but the implication is there.
Because, yeah. Look, that guy looks like the guy on the in the drawing on the left-hand side looks like he's totally about to grab that woman's breasts.
And, well, it doesn't help that the guy in the black and white picture looks is basically given a look saying, I just slipped a roofie in there. Happy the trails.
The next boys, girls, men, and women. If you know just 20 people, you can start a pyramid scheme. I mean, you could make at least $50. I can't believe they sold pyramid schemes to kids.
Well, they didn't know what a pyramid. Well, I mean, I guess they did. They didn't define a pyramid scheme at that point.
You know, it's kind of funny. Stanley has quoted his boss, Martin Goodman, as saying that the only people reading their comics were kids and a few illiterate adults. I kind of have to agree, given who they had as their sponsors, because we have so many ads like this next one. Make $3 to $5 an hour starting soon. Learn radio, TV, electronics, automation by practicing at home in your spare time. And it seemed a lot of these ads were either geared at, you know, a cool novelty toy or, as I would say on Tales of the JSA over and over again, get a job, hippie. And this is another one. NRI equipment speeds up learning. And it's just like, wow, that's really bizarre. But they paid the bills, and that was the important thing.
But you know what? Earl Gross of Hanover, Ontario has spare time radio TV service shop. He does work for Ford dealers.
W.F. Klein, Cincinnati, Ohio, went from factory laborer to his own business with sales of $158,000 in 1 year.
And E. Dwayne Bittner works on missiles.
Wow, that's that's
a
jump.
Make this stuff up, yeah.
Apparently, on the back cover, Abe Vigoda is looking for people to draw.
Yeah.
That dude totally looks like Fish from Barney Miller.
He does, too. And look at that come hither look, one eyebrow raised. What's your name? That really doesn't work without the visual, but.
And I'm going to draw this man and woman, and we're going to draw it together.
Put some happy
little
trees
keep it in. And you're going to keep it a secret, or I'm going to come to your house, and I will kill you.
Well,
Family Guy reference.
Yes, I remember it. Well, of course, this issue coming out in September of 1963, we want to look back at what was happening in Marvel history at that time, in the Marvel saga. And Ant-Man became Giant Man in Tales to Astonish number 49. The Lizard made his first appearance in Amazing Spider-Man number 6. The FF took on Molecule Man in Fantastic Four number 20. And Captain America kind of returns to take on the Human Torch. No, not really. It's actually the Acrobat in disguise in Strange Tales number 114. And then Iron Man battles the Melter. He's one that went far in Tales of Suspense number 47.
You want to talk about a character that had the most unforgettable rogues gallery at first? I read the first Marvel Masterworks of Iron Man. And that stuff was painful. I'm surprised that character survived.
Yeah.
I really, really am. I'm like really glad he's popular now, but what an uphill battle that he
absolutely
had to face. My God.
The melter. Guess what he does?
Makes julienne fries.
How did you know?
I'm like Professor Xavier. I can read minds. So
and corrupt them as well.
And corrupt them and make people forget about stuff because that's ethical. It doesn't invade his person and doesn't invade or infringe upon the man's civil liberties at all. Wow. Xavier's home for gifted students, or as I like to call it, Guantanamo Bay.
And as Michael mentioned, the Avengers face off against the Space Phantom in Avengers number 2, and Thor lays the hammer down on the human Cobra in Journey into Mystery number 98. In real world history, September 7th, the Pro Football Hall of Fame opened in Canton, Ohio, with 17 charter members. I'm going to mess up this name, but on September 10th, Mafia boss Bernardo Provenzano is indicted for murder, but is not captured until 43 years later on April 11th, 2006.
Wow.
Yeah, that guy had a good run. On September 15th, the American Civil Rights Movement had its, well, really a sad moment when the 16th Street Baptist Church got bombed in Birmingham, Alabama, and 4 people were killed in that, and 22 were injured. It's kind of neat to watch things like this play out up against the backdrop of what we're looking at. So that's
yeah,
it's a rough time at that point. On September 16th, Malaysia is formed by merging the Federation of Malaya and the British Crown Colony of Singapore and North Borneo, renamed Sabah. Sabah. It's a lava lava. Okay, I'm sorry.
And it's Sarawak.
And then rioters burned down the British embassy in Jakarta in protest to the formation of Malaysia on September 18th. And then on September 24th, the U.S. Senate ratifies the Nuclear Test Ban Treaty. So they're trying to stop the mutants.
Which, when you really think about it, is kind of scary, because at that point they went, you know, we've been blowing these things off like firecrackers for well over a decade now. Maybe we need to calm down and dial that down a bit. Wow. I love the 60s.
Well, it's weird to have come across that, because I was on Golden Age Superman a while back, and we talked about how even though there was an atomic situation in that, they had literally just learned that, or Einstein had just suggested that they could split the atom.
Mm-hmm.
So in 30 years, less than 30, because Hiroshima had already happened, to watch it progress is scary in terms of the power that thing holds, the potential. And thinking about it in that point of view, where they're talking about dialing it down, it does make people that shoot lasers from their eyes and move things with their mind a little bit scarier.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
But that brings us to the end of yet another episode of Xavier's Podcast for Gifted Youngsters.
Yet another of our 3. So,
well, we're on our way.
Yes, we are. No, I'm very excited. I rather enjoy the issue.
I did too. This was one of the better ones, honestly. And I really expected not to like it, but ended up really enjoying it.
Not that you can really tell by the way we ripped it apart.
Well, we're just little things. Little things matter. So next time around, we will look at X-Men issue number 3, and we'll also look at the X-Men's first crossover, in which Iron Man meets one of our merry mutants. We'll see you next time.
Bye, everybody!
You can find Xavier's Podcast for Gifted Youngsters on iTunes and at xavierspodcast.com. To get in touch with the show, you can drop us an email. The address is xavierspodcast@gmail.com. And you can become a fan of the show on Facebook at facebook.com/xavierspodcast. Until next time, thank you for listening.
Yes, the X-Men have won, but only for now. Magneto is still out there, waiting, planning, plotting the destruction of the human race. But whatever the challenge, whatever the peril, the X-Men will be there.